You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Well, we may not have any Heat playoff games to look forward to anytime soon, and the playoffs would have started a few days ago, there are still some things related to basketball taking place, including Jimmy Butler's continued generosity to his teammates, Deion Waiters making a public statement about the Heat, and Miami players still working out together, sort of. But first, it's what everyone's talking about on basketball Twitter, The Last Dance. And no, I'm not talking about Dwayne Wade's last season in Miami, but rather the 10-part documentary airing on ESPN and Netflix, focusing on Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. First two episodes aired just a day ago on Sunday night. Nothing too crazy. I think if you lived through that era and saw Michael Jordan in his prime, watched him playing at the level he did, perhaps you're not really surprised about anything that we've seen on the court so far. It focused a little bit on his playoff performance in his second year when he torched the Boston Celtics for 63 points in the playoffs in a loss. And it's also just kind of gone and back and forth within Michael Jordan's own life, starting off with his upbringing in Wilmington, North Carolina, going on to his rookie season in Chicago, the expectations that he had there, his career in Chapel Hill as a member of the UNC Tar Heels, and of course, the last season of his career in Chicago. And it's an interesting behind-the-scenes look at everything with a ton of access. So if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. If you love basketball, and there's a good chance that you are, if you're listening to this show, it's worth taking a look at. Just because, well, Jordan is an incredible player in NBA history. He probably is one of the top three players in NBA history, if not the greatest. It's a long discussion, and there's no real context for that. If you want my opinion, I'll give it to you. I don't think he's a number one player. I think LeBron has surpassed him, but overall, Jordan is certainly up there and a very, very successful player, a great player, a dominant and ruthless player. I think that's pretty fair when looking at what Jordan was able to accomplish as an NBA career. But even the name of the documentary itself is taken from Phil Jackson during his last year with the Bulls, knowing that he was not going to be retained by the team, that even as the general manager, Jerry Krause, told Jackson that you could win 82 games during the regular season, he was not going to come back as the head coach of the Chicago Bulls, and that Jordan was likely going to retire. Jackson handed out his preseason report to players who were reporting to camp, and he handed them a document that was labeled The Last Dance. And that, in a nutshell, is what we've seen so far, that for all the winning the Bulls did on the court, there was a ton of animosity behind the scenes. Animosity between players, between the front office and players, just what you would label probably a pretty toxic environment. And in context of Miami, the reason why I'm even bringing it up is because I just wanted to point out that I think a lot of what fans want to believe is this image of a team that gets along well, that is harmonious, that is friendly and open with one another, and that when they see a player causing a disruption, like this past season, either Deion Waiters or James Johnson or Justice Winslow, that they automatically believe that these players are a, quote, locker room cancer, end quote. Jordan was far more disruptive than any of those typical players, but he was also Michael Jordan, and he could get away with a lot. If you listen to Steve Kerr in his recent podcast with Zach Lowe of ESPN, he talked about the fact that Michael could say a lot and say whatever he wanted to. He could get away with these things. He was Michael frickin' Jordan, and he had a lot of control on that team. And so he was able to get away with pretty much anything. He was understood and accepted. He openly mocked the team's general manager, Krause. He made fun of his height and weight, even nicknamed him Crumbs because he was overweight and looked like he always had crumbs on his clothing. And so when you look at Miami, when you look at the instances over the past year, Waiters and JJ and Winslow, and it's easy to kind of dismiss them as players that have been somewhat problematic. But I also think back to that 2006 championship roster with Shaquille O'Neal and Dwayne Wade, Gary Payton and Dwayne fighting on the court, guys not necessarily getting along that had been brought together for that year, you know, Antoine Walker, James Posey, Jason Williams, of course. There was this, you know, it was a very mixed bag of players put together on that roster. They just happened to have a lot of talent. They were very cohesive in as far as their playing style is concerned. And they had Shaquille O'Neal playing at an almost MVP type level. They had Dwayne playing at an incredible all-star level and, of course, taking his game up to another level when he reached the playoffs and the finals in particular. And so they might not necessarily have been very cohesive, friendly towards one another. Maybe they didn't get along off the court at all, but on the court, they were able to put a lot of that aside. And so it's just interesting kind of thinking about how teams get along, how they don't, and the expectations of fans. I just think that as we're watching this Jordan documentary, it's kind of good context for a lot of the interplay behind the scenes that we're never quite privy to. I mean, even as a media member, and I'm certainly not as plugged in as others, or maybe I just don't see everything, and maybe I block out, or I'm not necessarily focused on some things. There is so much that happens in a working environment like this. The kind of incredible intimacy that these players and coaches are forced to develop with one another. They travel all the time. They go from city to city. They spend so much time with each other. It's bound to get a little toxic or unharmonious at some points. They spend more time with each other than they do with their own families. And as anybody with a family can attest, there's a good chance that you're going to get into a fight with a brother, sister, partner, parent, etc. And I don't think a team is any different. You know, they're people with different backgrounds. You have Kelly Olynyk from Kamloops, Canada, British Columbia, and then you've got Jimmy Butler from Tomball, Texas. You got Dwayne Wade from Chicago. You got Bam Adebayo from North Carolina, and on and on and on. All these guys with different personalities. You never know how they're going to get along together. And so Eric Spoelstra has to do the best that he possibly can to juggle all these personalities, massage all these egos, get them focused on one thing. And a lot of players can do that. And sometimes they can't. And sometimes they'll fight. And, you know, we saw in the first two episodes, we saw a scene of Michael Jeffrey Jordan yelling at players on that roster, just ripping into them because they had been losing a few games at the start of the season, calling his own All-Star Hall of Fame teammate Scottie Pippen selfish for electing to have surgery at the start of the season rather than at the end of the previous one, knowing that he was going to try and stick it to management as he was trying to renegotiate his contract. It's just pretty open and toxic. And all these things matter because players want to get paid. They'll always want money. That's just why they're in this. They're not, as much as we want to believe that they're in it for the love of the game, and they probably do love the game to a huge degree, they also want to get paid, and they want to be compensated, and they want to establish an incredible legacy, and all those things are thwarted or jeopardized in some way by their teammates, by front offices, by coaches. You look at Kevin Love, you know, a player who is on the cusp of a potential Hall of Fame career, and you see what played out this past season with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And while John Beilein might be a hell of a person or a good person to get along with, he may not be a good NBA coach. And Love was frustrated, and he let it be known. And so Beilein was costing him an opportunity to grow his game, to establish his legacy, etc. And these things matter to these players. It's just naive to think otherwise. And as we're watching the Heat, who I do believe get along pretty cohesively, I think that locker room is a pretty harmonious one. I've been in others. I think the Heat one is as steady and fun, and they get along. There's a little bit of ribbing there, good-natured ribbing, between Bam and Jimmy, between Jimmy and Goran, between Jimmy and everybody, because that's just Jimmy's personality. But I think, all in all, this locker room does get along pretty well. And I think it's worth noting. But I think it's also worth pointing out that maybe none of this matters. That as long as they have supreme talents like Adebayo and Butler, they don't necessarily have to get along well. So it's kind of a catch-22. You'd like to for these players to get along. You'd like to be able to feel a sense of camaraderie from them that you can share in, to be empathetic towards, to embrace as your team, as a fun team. And yet, so long as they win, that's probably all that really matters to a whole heck of a lot of fans. And so I just thought it was worth pointing out and context of The Last Dance, because we're all watching it. I think if we're anybody who loves basketball as much as we do, you're probably going to be watching parts of the documentary, especially since they're available online. It is an interesting look. Again, nothing out of the ordinary for me. I saw Jordan play at this point in time during his peak. I've read some of the books that cover this era, knowing what Jordan's toxic personality was like, and the strife between Scottie Pippen and Krause and others. And so this hasn't been too surprising just yet, although it's kind of interesting to see what it takes to build a, not necessarily sociopathic, but just, well, borderline sociopathic drive to be the very best, to crush everybody beneath your heel, which is basically what determined what Jordan's career was going to be. I mean, he was as ruthless a player as I've ever seen, and much more than most, I think. And he had the athletic ability to be able to propel that drive to harness it and focus it and become perhaps one of the best players in the game, certainly up there, you know, depending on what your feelings are regarding LeBron James. Either way, what did Dion Waiters say or didn't say about the end of his tenure in Miami? I'll break that down next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates come in. Look, we're all dealing with this right now. We're all stuck at home for the most part. We're trying to make the most of the opportunity, and so we have a wonderful service that can deliver anything that you need at a moment's notice. That's why you should be relying on Postmates. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right next to my door. But they don't just deliver burgers and sushi. Postmates actually makes my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, anything that I can't get to at this point in time, which is not much. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs that you can't go on anyway. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore because that's where Postmates comes in. Just download the app on iOS or Android, find your favorites, get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app, use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Before I even get into the details of Dion Waiters' newest piece on the Players Tribune, I can already hear the critics, of which I do have, surprisingly enough. I can hear them saying, who cares? Dion's not on this team. Forget him. He's a bum. I'm glad he's gone, etc. And they're right. But I also believe that his opinion matters because I can tell you this much. With just 450 players, give or take, on an NBA roster, on NBA rosters at one time, no team can afford to alienate any player or have them talk badly about a franchise or anything like that. Players will talk. They're human. They get together, or at least they used to. They still FaceTime. They record podcasts together. They get together. They talk about their employers, the coaches, the front office people, and careers are made or broken forever because of those conversations. We talk about stability all the time, something the Heat have and they take great pride in. But if Pat Riley doesn't win that ring in 2006 with Shaq and Dwayne and that core of veterans, and if firing Stan Van Gundy and then alienating Shaquille O'Neal, you don't think his reputation would have taken a huge hit? The stability that they take pride in wouldn't have taken a huge hit? If Dwayne Wade doesn't learn to appreciate a young assistant coach named Eric Spoelstra, a guy with zero NBA playing experience and nothing really beyond Riley's support, do you think Spo gets the job? You think he becomes the guy who takes over for Pat frickin' Riley? You think LeBron James and Chris Bosh and Jimmy Butler join the Heat if Spo didn't have Dwayne's support? Not for a minute. And so while it's easy to dismiss Dion, you have better believe that his voice carries and players will believe other players a million times over they buy into a front office that will trade you at a moment's notice or screw you out of money in some way. So having said that, Dion did mention a couple things worth pointing out. He said, look, I think this really stands out. He still has love for Pat Riley. This is a quote. Let's put that on record. Still got love for Pat. Still got all the respect in the world for Mickey Arison. When it was good, you know? But even before the season, we knew it was over. Now, that's interesting. And I think that's where you kind of read some of the subtext there. This is all supposition. I've said it before. I've recorded podcasts about this before. Take it for what it is. This is just my own personal belief. I think that there is strife there. Was strife there between Dion Waiters and other members of that front office, the coaching staff in particular, that doomed his tenure in Miami. There was no way he was going to get past that animosity. And so while Pat may have believed in Dion Waiters, Mickey Arison may have believed in Dion Waiters, the other people, those coaches, did not believe in Dion anymore, or they thought that that relationship was irreparable, and they were ready to move on. And then that's why Dion did not get the playing time that he thought he deserved at the start of the season. Now, he also took credit, or rather just accepted responsibility for what happened on the plane. He also said that he owns that. He owned what happened on the plane incident regarding the gummies and everything else that we've come to understand. He also says it was idiotic on my behalf, point blank, period. And what's crazy is my whole life I've been a leader. I'm not a follower. Pat knows me. He knows I don't do drugs, end quote. So these are things that I've talked about before. And he also follows up, and I'll point this out too. He says, sometimes you're going through dark times. You can fall trapped to things you'd never do in your right mind. See, I talked about this. I talked about this at length, and a lot of you dismissed it because we were critical of Dion. You were pissed off at the fact that he was, quote unquote, causing the season and things of that sort, that he was a toxic personality and otherwise a blemish on what was otherwise a bright season. He wasn't any of that. Like, he was stressed. He was upset. He was freaking out about not getting any playing time. He took a gummy to relax, and he freaked out. He owns it. He buys into it. He understands that he made a mistake. He accepts the responsibility for it. He told his sons what happened, according to this piece. He also said he never had a seizure or any of the misreporting that we've heard about any of the stories or anything like that. He also is kind of pissed off that that was leaked out there, or that there were some exaggeration regarding his impact, his reaction to whatever cannabinoid-related product he took. So either way, these are kind of the things that he's just clarifying there. He's pointing these things out because I think he's just kind of clearing the slate here. He's not playing. He's got time in his hands. He also says, look, Instagram is one big shit show, and that's a quote from him. It's a trap. You score 40, you're a hero. Everybody love you. You score 10, and the hate you get is just pathetic. Grown-ass men making fake accounts, taking the time to really do that, talking shit about another person's weight. And look, we heard a lot about it. I mean, a lot of people listening to this show are probably upset with Dion calling him fat. Dion Waiters, spelled the way weight is spelled. You know, it's weird behavior. I understand that you're very emotionally involved in following the team and everything else, but I don't think Dion was ever the problem. Like, he came back to camp out of shape last season. I'm saying 2 years ago, and it cost the team a little bit, but he lost the weight, and he even says so, even when he was fat, and he admits to being fat, you know, and this is fat within NBA context, not daily life context. He was still getting buckets, and he was, even when he was at his heaviest in Miami, he was still Miami's best player as far as being able to drive the basketball better than Josh Richardson, who was at 5% body fat, if even, better than an older Dwayne Wade, better than Goran Dragic at his age. Dion Waiters was still capable of putting the ball down the floor and getting to the rim whenever he wanted to. He was. He had a better first step than anybody else in that roster, and I'll admit that, and I'll say it pretty clearly, and I think that's the absolute truth. I don't think it's a belief either. I believe it's just it's a fact, not a belief. So he kind of comes clean about everything. He also says that business, the NBA is a business with a capital B, bro. And I love that about Dion, is that he's honest about that. And he says, I'll just leave it at that. It's a business, and don't ever let them tell you different. And again, I think this kind of speaks to what I was hinting at in the first segment, is that while we all think of the Heat family being just that, and there are certainly familial aspects about it, it's also very much a business, and they get pissed off. And when your money is tied into it, or when, you know, people invest money in you and you don't necessarily turn around your career the way they'd like to, it can be somewhat problematic. They stop having trust issues, and relationships can get pretty toxic and go downhill pretty quickly. And so I think it's interesting that Dion was able to kind of verbalize these things. He talks about being depressed, having mental health issues. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, look, he never came across that way. I think he was just really upset, and he just didn't know how to express himself, and it's tough. And he's had really traumatic experiences in his life, things that we all kind of overlook when we talk about the Dion narrative. Like, it's fun to watch Dion be the aggressive scorer, the guy who takes that shot no matter what, etc. It's great to make fun of his irrational confidence and to kind of have fun with the whole idea of Dion being this larger than life personality. But there's also a big part of it, you know, his upbringing, the things that he's seen from the streets of his Philadelphia hometown that most of us can't really relate to. And it's probably created some demons there. It's probably created some dark times in his past and his present. And so I think we should all have a little bit more sympathy when it comes to players in general and Dion in particular. And I'm glad that he wrote this in between this and his recent interview with Ron Ned Carney, something I talked about in an episode last week, which you should totally check out. I think it's interesting to to see Deion still being in the public eye, still kind of working his way back, and I hope nothing for the best from him. I don't know how it's going to play out. My feeling is, and I think we're starting to see the tea leaves clear a little bit more clearly now, is that this season probably is going to be canceled. I just don't see any kind of realistic restart button being pressed here. There's not a lot of options. It's not just about having these games without fans. It's just about minimizing contact between players and referees and producers and video recorders and everything else. I mean, there's just so much going on in any kind of production that I just don't see it being realistic. Somebody somewhere is going to have some kind of contagion, and if that's the case, you can't risk that kind of exposure. And so I don't see how the season's going to restart anytime soon. So we'll see what happens. But either way, I hope Deion is a part of the league. I hope that he is healthy and happy. I hope he makes the most of this opportunity. If you look at this piece, if you don't read it, and you absolutely should, because, well, why not? He also mentions his family a lot. And I think these are the kinds of things that you should balance out. Whatever criticism you have of Deion Waiters, you should also kind of consider the fact that he loves his family, that that's what really grounds him. As far as just being balanced in life and appreciating the little things, is that he has these family members, his kids, his girl, that he loves with all of his heart and that he wants to be there for and better for, etc. And so when you think about that, when you think of Deion, the family member, the father, the guy who wants to just play with his kids and be respected and to create something on the court, I think it's easy to have a little sympathy, a little empathy more than anything else for the way his career ended in Miami. And I wish him nothing but the best. Whether he's in Los Angeles or elsewhere, he deserves another opportunity, and we'll see what happens next season once it eventually resumes. Next, the Heat are still working out online, and Jimmy Butler made staying in game shape a little easier for his teammates. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So last week, the Heat actually had a teleconference with head strength and conditioning coach Eric Foran. Foran is in his third season as the head of Heat strength and conditioning program, and he was on a Zoom conference call for media members. I was a part of that, and Foran spoke at length about some of the things that were going on with the team through this hiatus from basketball. They're still leading, remote conferencing workouts where they have, they use Zoom basically to lead these team workouts to help players stay in shape. We talked about this before. I think if you recall my interview, or not my interview, but rather the interview with Eric Spoelstra a few weeks ago, where he talked about what was going on with him and the team. This was another conference call for media members via Zoom. He spoke about how players and coaching staff all get together at Zoom every morning, via Zoom every morning, and they talk. And they shoot the shit. They talk shit to one another, kind of go on about what's going on in life. And then Eric Foran gets in there and he leads a workout. Who knows how seriously they're taking it, but I think being the Heat, being NBA players that are probably a little bored at this point, they take it pretty seriously. And so these workouts are about 5 per week. They go between 60 and 90 minutes. And it's just, a little bit of everything, trying to keep you in shape. Things that you can do to help stay a little bit limber, to be a little bit stronger, and just try and establish some kind of camaraderie during tough times. Because I think that's something that we're all hearing about, is these players, they're such social people. They're constantly, again, traveling with a traveling party that includes players, coaches, etc. And for a lot of them, they're kind of removed from that. It's one thing to have your family members close by, but there are some guys that don't have a lot of family. I mean, you think of a guy like Chris Silva. He's probably sitting in a hotel room in downtown Miami right now without anybody to really talk to. I mean, maybe his agent, maybe a manager, maybe some other players around town. I mean, Duncan Robinson, I know he's back with his family up in the Northeast. He's not here in South Florida. Chris's family, he has his uncle in Boston, but he has his mom all the way in Gabon. I mean, it's not like he can reach out to these people very easily. It's not like you can travel around too much. So, I mean, a lot of them don't have much of anything. And so they are a little removed from being able to interact with one another, to be able to establish that kind of regular chemistry and camaraderie of being in the locker room, cracking jokes, going to restaurants and bars and movies and bowling and God knows what else. Just the kind of things that you do while you're part of the NBA lifestyle. And so these kind of workouts, I think, represent a good opportunity to connect and to reestablish those kind of relationships and help maintain them during this long time. I know other teams are doing this as well, but I like the fact that Miami's been very active about this, that they promoted it, they talked about it, and it's just good to see. And it's also a really good sign that the team's de facto leader, Jimmy Butler, is taking an active role in this. A couple days ago, it was reported, I think it was reported here that a lot of the Heat players don't necessarily have baskets. And so Jimmy took it upon himself to work with a company called Lifetime Fitness. They're based out of Colorado. He reached out to them and he ordered basketball hoops for all of his teammates. Goran Dragic mentioned it in an Instagram live story with Jason Jackson recently. He talked about getting a big box delivered to his house. He didn't know what it was, and he opened it up, and it was a basketball hoop. He said that he did have a hoop. He was one of the few Heat players that does have a hoop before Jimmy's kind gift. But it was a kid's gift. It was a kid's hoop, rather. It was one that his kids were using, and it wasn't exactly the same kind of thing that you can work out on a regular basis. And look, I remember the discussions when we first heard about players being stuck in hiatus and things of that sort. A lot of casual fans around Twitter. And that's not necessarily the best gauge for anything educational or some good discourse or anything like that. But they were all talking about, oh, these players are millionaires. They all have huge hoops and things of this sort. If that horse competition that a lot of you probably didn't see on ESPN a few weeks ago, if you watched that at all, even the huge players or NBA superstars, like a guy like Paul Pierce, who's a Hall of Famer, who made millions and millions of dollars over the course of his career, he's got an outdoor court. Not much better than the one I have a couple blocks away from my house. That it's there, you know, poolside on his huge complex in Los Angeles is one thing, but it's not a great outdoor court or anything like that. Mike Conley is the only player of all the participants in that hoop contest who had an indoor court. I spoke to Myers Leonard, part of my interview a couple weeks ago. He didn't have any kind of court or anything like that. A lot of these guys, like I just mentioned, live in condos, they live in apartments. They don't have access to the kind of gym that a lot of NBA players have during practices and regular sessions and things of that sort. They have not picked up a basketball in weeks in a lot of cases. And so for Jimmy to go buy these things, and look, I looked them up. I'm on the Lifetime.com website just now, and you know, your typical hoop, a portable basketball hoop, $500. Yeah. Bought 15 of them, let's say, 12, 13, somewhere around there, 14, who knows, however many he bought individually. But he's also going to donate a number of them around Miami-Dade County schools and things of that sort. So it was a nice gesture from Jimmy. And again, another sign that maybe he's not the locker room cancer a lot of people claimed he was. And so during these tough times when you know, these players are missing a lot of the advantages that they normally have, the resources that they normally take advantage of, Jimmy's helped him out the best they can, and the team's also doing their share by hosting these Zoom conference calls and letting everybody work out and kind of just chat and reconnect and things of that sort. So it's a good opportunity, and I'm hopeful that when basketball does resume, whenever that might be, this team will be a little bit better and stronger as a result. We're not quite sure how that's going to plan out. I know that they've talked about, the number is, it's escaping my memory just now, but a 25-day window before the season resumes or restarts or whatever, where they would have a very intense training camp, where they would have individual workout sessions for players, kind of speed up the process a little bit, get them back in playing shape, and then get them back out on the court again. That's if the season was going to resume, which it probably will not. If a new season restarts, there's a good chance they'll just have your regular training camp and try to get you back into shape that way. But we'll see how it plays out. Either way, for Miami, for Miami's players, this opportunity is a good one. It establishes Jimmy as a pretty good guy, a good locker room presence, another leader in that locker room. And I think it speaks volumes about how good a person and teammate he's been to defy all the criticism we heard before his acquisition this past offseason. And hopefully Heat players are appreciative. It sounded like Goran was very appreciative. He thanked him, called him a brother. I know they have a strong chemistry and a strong friendship, but it's always good to see that kind of further reinforced, even during these times where a lot of people are scared and concerned about their health and, again, not having the kind of access that they're used to. So good for Jimmy, good for the Heat, and hopefully they'll take advantage of the opportunity. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thank you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dean.